Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the MisesUK.org podcast as sponsored by Finlingo.com. My name's Andy Duncan and tonight I'm coming to you from the gorgeous English town of Henley-on-Thames in deepest Oxfordshire, where today it's been a beautiful Christmassy sunny day. Tonight I'll be speaking to Roman Skarskiu, a business entrepreneur in the Ukraine and an evangelist for Bitcoin. We'll be talking about the past, the present and the future of Bitcoin itself. In just a few years, this cryptographic monetary exchange phenomenon has gone from just a few cents per Bitcoin to, as we speak today on Monday the 18th of December 2017 at 7 p.m, over $18,550. So what is Bitcoin? Is it in a bubble like Tulip Mania? Can a Bitcoin have intrinsic value? What does intrinsic mean in a subjective world? Will the nascent world government ban Bitcoin to make it worthless? Can it actually ban Bitcoin even if it wants to? Did the NSA invent Bitcoin? I'll try to find out all of this and more in tonight's program. Good evening, Roman.
Good evening, Andy.
So which part of the Ukraine are you in tonight?
I'm in Kiev, the capital.
And how's the weather there?
Well, apparently not as nice as over there on the Thames. It was been a snowy, rainy day.
Oh, crikey. Well, you used to live in Lviv, didn't you?
Yes, I did, and I miss it.
Yeah, where Mises himself was born.
Birthplace of Mises, yep.
So, to business. I'm going to lay this on you, but just so we can get the ball rolling, for those listeners who are a bit hazy on the subject, could you give us a 30,000-foot view of what a Bitcoin actually is?
It is electronic money that is probably so secure that not even state actors can tamper with it.
Okay, and it rests on something called a blockchain. Can you tell us what that is?
A blockchain is a decentralized ledger so secure that not even state actors can tamper with it. And Bitcoin is the first, if you let me define that first, that a blockchain is this secure, super secure, decentralized ledger, then that makes it easier to define Bitcoin as the first implementation of such a ledger as money.
So this ledger is held all over the world by everybody who's using Bitcoin and the blockchain. It's not held in one central place, such as in the middle of the Federal Reserve or anything.
That's the general idea, yeah. It's not technically precise because you can have, you know, a super lightweight wallet that connects to somebody else's ledger. But for all intents and purposes, yes, the ledger is all over the place.
Okay, now at the end of this program tonight, we're going to have a little section where you're going to give us some help on where we can find out more about the technical aspects of Bitcoin. So let's get more to the kind of theoretical and economic effects. It's about $18,000 per Bitcoin at the moment, and that's grown massively in just the last couple of months, and it's grown hyperbolically in the last few years. What's driving this price explosion?
Well, what I'm about to tell you, I think is a big key, because a lot of people are analyzing it from the perspective of an asset. And these are people who've spent their careers watching assets go up and down. But I think that Bitcoin primarily is a new technology. And when you're looking at the curve, you shouldn't be thinking asset price. You should be thinking technology adoption. And I encourage anyone to look up technology adoption curves. They all look more or less the same, whether you're talking about radio, color televisions, internet, home computers, smartphones. It's a technology adoption curve. Yes, it will have panics. Yes, it will have rallies and profit taking and all that emotion that goes with rapidly rising assets. But over the long term, it's technology adoption.
Now, if you read someone like Murray Rothbard or Guido Hulsmann or any of the great kind of monetary Austrians in the last 50 years or so, they've talked about money in terms of gold, and groups like the Federal Reserve and others taking hundreds of years to kind of debase gold, and first of all to monopolize gold as money, and then to debase gold as money or silver, and then to take it over and then to introduce fiat money. Now, since 1971, when we've moved on to a completely fiat paper money, Keynesian monetary standard based in Washington with the Federal Reserve controlling all the other Western central banks, they've done absolutely everything they can to suppress the price of gold, and they've pretty much been successful in that. Do you think they're going to see their new enemy as Bitcoin challenging their monopoly on money production?
I think that's exactly what's happening. And I think the correct way to talk about Bitcoin is not in terms of its dollar price, but in terms of what percentage of, say, the M2 monetary supply, or what percentage of the of the world gold supply can cryptocurrencies compare to. So right now, all the value of all cryptocurrencies is about $600 billion. Half of that is Bitcoin, half of that is other cryptocurrencies. And Bitcoin's share is dropping, which, you know, if you want to talk about hyperbolic curves, if Bitcoin is growing so fast, but its share is still dropping, you can imagine how fast some of these smaller coins are growing. But anyway, right now, all the crypto coins in the world are worth about 8% of all the gold in the world and are worth about 4.5% of the M2 dollar supply.
So if Bitcoin then is feared by these central banks, because just like most socialist organizations, they're pretty inefficient. They've been keeping their eye on gold and silver for the past 30 years, and they've not had their eyes on cryptocurrencies at all. But we are seeing things such as the Chinese government doesn't really like Bitcoin, and we're seeing the Russian government doesn't really like Bitcoin. If the central banks and all the states that control the central banks wanted to stop these cryptocurrencies, especially Bitcoin, would they actually be able to?
It would be extremely hard, and I'll explain why. And then I'll tell you why what you said, especially Bitcoin, is interesting, because Bitcoin's much better for them than some of the alternatives. It would be hard to stop Bitcoin because it's decentralized. There's no center. There's no servers to confiscate. There's no people to put in jail. It's a peer-to-peer system. And unlike, say, sharing movies through torrents, Bitcoin requires a tiny bit of traffic to work for exchanges to go through. So it's really hard to detect, and it's very decentralized. It does not seem to me like they can stop it without shutting down the internet. What they can very easily decide is whether it will be a black market or a white market or something in between. And that's what's happening now. You said especially Bitcoin, which was interesting, because I think if they take an honest look of what's in the interest of those central banks, it is to the scariest thing is not Bitcoin. The scariest thing is some of the alternatives like Monero, which is super secret. You can't even see what transactions are happening in Monero. In Bitcoin, you can see that who sent money where. You don't see the people, but you see the addresses. You see the flow of Bitcoins.
Uh-huh.
Yep. But there are some others that are just completely dark to outside eyes, the most prominent of which seems to be Monero. So those are the ones that are really scary for them.
Okay, so I mean, what they've got is they've got this money monopoly where they have this open-ended, there's no cap on the number of dollars that can be created out of thin air. And it's a lovely, lovely privilege to have to just basically print your own money and spend it on everything. With this limit of 21 million bitcoins, there is this hard cap. Some people have actually said as well, though, that the NSA invented Bitcoin, perhaps, and that Satoshi Nakamoto, the apocryphal kind of person who created it, was actually an NSA agent. That means that possibly we shouldn't trust Bitcoin. But what do you think of this kind of conspiracy theory?
I think it's extremely unlikely, and I wouldn't waste too much energy on it. It is so clearly not in the interest of central banks or any organizations connected to central banks to have cryptocurrencies. I think if you're taking a really long-term view, just to give you a sense of how powerful this march of cryptocurrencies is going to be, like, I think you could make bets like shorting real estate in London or New York based on the rise of cryptocurrencies. I wouldn't do anything that crazy. I think there's still a lot of value in just buying and holding, but it's so clearly not in the interest of a central government that I wouldn't worry. Also, it's very important to know that it's open source. So there are no secrets in how Bitcoin works. A good programmer or team of programmers can see all the code, and they can copy it, and they do copy it, and they make new versions of Bitcoin. And if they don't like the way Bitcoin is evolving, people can and do just make alternatives. They're called forks. So suddenly the system splits in two. It's not, you know, the cat's out of the bag, and I don't think it can be controlled. So yeah, you can put that one to rest.
Yeah, there was some worry, wasn't there, about the SHA-256 encryption algorithm, which Bitcoin uses, which possibly was an NSA invention.
That's right. Yeah, that's where the conspiracy comes from. The encryption algorithm that Bitcoin uses for proof of work is supposedly invented by the NSA. But you know what? If there was some, let's say that the NSA has a backdoor to that algorithm, what they could theoretically do is just become a super effective miner. So they could be the ones that are building the blockchain, and they could make faulty transactions or whatever kind of transactions they want. That would be the only consequence of the SHA-256 algorithm being a fraud. Okay, and those consequences are not that bad because the ledger is public, and the Bitcoin community would very likely just reset the ledger, decide we'll just go back in time before this chaos started, and we'll fix it, we'll change it from SHA-256 to something else, and we'll just resume the blockchain from when we knew it was good. There's actually a precedent in Ethereum where they sort of went back in time after a bug was exploited to steal a bunch of Ethereum. So it's not, even the threat of SHA-256 being compromised is not that big a deal.
Okay, we just recently, we had a fork, didn't we? We had a Bitcoin Cash fork. Can you just explain what that was?
So the Bitcoin community has been ravaged by a very venomous debate over the block size, basically over how quickly transactions will process. And there's a lot of, you know, it's a complicated technical thing. So that fixing the block size makes some other theoretical problems. But anyway, people are tired of the network being slow, and they're tired of high fees. And for a long time, there's been this debate. And Bitcoin Cash was just a rogue group, very small percent of the community that just said, you know what, we're going to do it. We're going to increase the block size ourselves. And they went off and launched a new version. The version launched after a specific block, and the next block. After that, in other words, there were two different blocks. There was Bitcoin and there was Bitcoin Cash. A little bit of the politics here was interesting. Nobody took Bitcoin Cash too seriously because it was still a big deal to have the first ever fork, but it wasn't a bigger deal because Bitcoin was planning to increase the block size like a month later. So everyone thought it would get fixed. But then the Bitcoin team canceled that improvement. And then all hell broke loose. People were so angry, they started dumping their Bitcoin, buying Bitcoin Cash after the cancellation. And Cash shot up, Bitcoin kind of crashed, I think losing 20%. But then after 2 days, Bitcoin recovered. Bitcoin Cash went a little bit down, but not as low as they were. And now they're both going forward.
Crikey. I think we better let people read up on this after the end of the program when we give them some links, because it could take some while to get into all of that, but it sounds interesting. Now, I just wanted to cover a couple of interesting Austrian-type questions. Now, going from Misesian regression theory, von Mises said that all monies have to grow out of something that used to, before it was money, have some kind of other use value. So gold could be used for jewellery. Then it became a valuable thing to exchange. Then it became money. And some people call this an intrinsic value, though in obviously a subjective world, there is no such thing as intrinsic value, but use value for doing something else. Now, Bitcoin can't really be used for anything else other than as a money. And some Austrians have sort of said that this means it will ultimately fail because it doesn't fulfill this Misesian regression theorem condition. What do you think of this debate?
I don't understand those Austrians at all. I think Bitcoin perfectly satisfies Mises's regression theorem. First, let's look at it as a new technology, as a new type of money. It's more portable than gold. It is more durable than fiat. It's more divisible than either one of them. It's more secure than either one of them. It can't be counterfeited. It crosses borders without any trouble whatsoever. It is more scarce than fiat, and probably more scarce than gold too, because who knows how much gold we can find on an asteroid or still in the ground. So it is a wonderful, wonderful technology. But okay, you can say, well, that doesn't completely satisfy the regression theorem because it needs to have a little bit of value. You know, you need to regress to a little bit of value before it can be used as money. But let's just call it a technological, philosophical curiosity. You know, if you give it any value at all, then it has all these wonderful properties as money. The regression theorem is perfectly satisfied. I cannot understand why the debate is still underway.
I think it's a bit odd myself. I mean, because we've been using fiat dollars for 50 years and they have absolutely no value at all. And they could be created to infinity and beyond. So it really does puzzle me this. But I think it's a bit like the Ayn Rand thing in her branch of libertarianism. People see Mises as a bit of a god and people don't go against him. But I'm sure Mises himself would have loved people to have challenged his own theories.
And it doesn't challenge his theory. I mean, if it, let's say Bitcoin is worth a penny as something that's, hey, kind of cool, it solves an academic problem called the decentralized consensus problem. They used to think that in a decentralized network, you could never come to an agreement to have a ledger. Okay, so let's say Bitcoin is worth one tiny little fraction of a penny as a cool solution to this very scholarly, archaic problem called the decentralized consensus problem. So, okay, it solves a problem, but as soon as it does, as soon as its value goes from zero to something, then it has all these wonderful values as money, and its value can skyrocket. I don't think it violates regression at all.
And just one other Austrian thing I wanted to mention. You might have read Doug French's fantastic book on tulip mania.
Yes.
What that describes is a massive bubble, the Mississippi bubble and the tulip mania bubble as well, when futures in tulip bulbs in Holland were changing hands for vast sums of money. And one day, I think a French sailor ate a tulip bulb because he thought it was an onion. And on that day, the price of tulips futures collapsed massively. Is there anything you can think of out there? You say it's a new technology and everything, and it's going to follow a technology curve like the rise of computers and so on. But is there anything that could prick this Bitcoin bubble, even if it's just a better cryptographic currency that evolves from it?
Yeah, certainly better cryptocurrencies can prick the Bitcoin bubble. A lot of this might be decided by governments. If governments recognize this as legitimate competition and say, okay, we better be very disciplined in our own monetary policy, then that will limit Bitcoin's, then that will limit Bitcoin's rise, because people will be happy using dollars if the Fed follows a strict policy, right? If the government takes a middle approach, then I think dollars will fall and Bitcoin will go up. And if the government takes a super strict approach and tries to kill Bitcoin, maybe they'll succeed. But then one of these dark coins like Monero or maybe Zcash will be the people's choice.
At the moment, it's almost impossible to get hold of a Bitcoin because people are just hoarding them, essentially. When do you see it eventually becoming a general kind of exchange medium, a money that people just use without thinking about too much?
Well, I think if you go to some of the well-established sort of retail exchanges, like Coinbase is the main one, you can buy Bitcoins in all of 10 minutes with your credit card. There's a lot of people doing so now, so the transactions are a little slow, but these companies like Coinbase will give you a 10-minute experience and it'll be fine. So I don't think it's hard to get. Interesting that you mention store of value or unit of exchange, because what I see happening is the different purposes of money are diverging from each other. Money has three definitions, right? Store of value, unit of account, and medium of exchange. Okay. Unit of account, it remains dollars because cryptos are way too volatile. We want to know how much things are worth in dollars. The other two, store of value and medium of exchange, seem to be splitting. Bitcoin seems to be the store of value, and the unit of exchange seems to like a contest between three of Bitcoin's rivals: Dash, which is my favorite of the bunch, Bitcoin Cash, which we talked about that emerged in the fork, and Litecoin. So those three are competing for medium of exchange, and it seems to me like Bitcoin is completely content being the store of value. Very interesting phenomenon.
Now, two things you didn't mention there is gold and silver. Now, Austrian gold bugs like me in the past, I've done some work for Gold Money and other similar organizations, have been very fixated on gold and silver for the past 20, 30 years, and yet you didn't mention either of those two things in your last answer there. As money, do you think gold and silver are now dead?
No, I absolutely don't think that. If we can, Bitcoin versus gold. Bitcoin is a jailbreak. I said this when I debated Bitcoin versus gold with Jim Rickards, another famous gold bug. Bitcoin is the jailbreak. Bitcoin is a reaction to an unfair fiat system. But if we can imagine a world in which the government gives up and says, okay, money is private, use whatever you want, then gold is valuable. Then it's gold and silver, the historic store of value. But we don't live in that world. We live in a world where it's so hard to send money around the world. It's so hard. Like, you have all these currency controls. So crypto is the currency for this world.
It is a kind of breakout thing, isn't it? I mean, one of my favourite novels is called Snow Crash. And in that, we see future groups, one's called the New Victorians, and they come to rule a much freer world. You know, they're the kind of leaders of the free world because they broke through all these state controls. And possibly Bitcoin might be one of these kind of ways of breaking through. Do you think it could be too? Do you think it could be the kind of spearhead technology to finally break this grip of the state gangs upon the rest of us?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it already is. I mean, think about it. 4.5% of the M2 dollar supply, that is huge. You know, almost 8% of the world gold supply, that's a huge amount of value. And it's still so early. I think in the next 3 years, we're going to go from 20 or 30 million people using cryptocurrencies to 1 billion. And I think that trend is what's going to dominate all these rallies and crashes. And there will be crashes and there will be rallies and there will be panics. All that will happen. But primarily it's going to be what you just said. It's overcoming this fiat system, which is very unfair.
Well, we certainly do live in interesting times. Now, we've only just touched on Bitcoin tonight. We could speak for hours and hours and hours, but people's time is limited. So if people out there do want to learn more about Bitcoin, I know you have some resources to help people learn about how to trade in Bitcoin, how it works, the blockchain and so on. Can you tell us a little bit about your resources that you have online for people?
Well, the best resources are not mine. I've been giving advice to so many friends that I've decided to consolidate it for my own sake. And I started a newsletter and it has an accompanying blog called Tweedle Whopper. Tweedle Whopper. But the best sources are Reddit. For whatever crypto coin you want to look at, let's say Ethereum, you go to reddit.com/r/Ethereum or Monero or whatever, Dash. That's great. There's a forum called bitcointalk.org that is still the original forum with new ideas. That's a great place. Or if you're a beginner, just search for the beginner videos. You'll get more than you can handle if you just search for, you know, introduction to whatever you want to learn about. We're swimming in information. It's not that hard.
Fantastic. Well, I think it's time for me now to open a very cheeky bottle of Argentinian Malbec over here in England. It was great speaking to you tonight, Roman. You've sent me the address of your website. I'm going to put that in the show notes. And hopefully I'll see you again in Bodrum next year, or if not sooner. Thank you very much for your time tonight.
Thank you, Andy. My pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed tonight's program on the MisesUK.org podcast. To help us out, if you'd like to leave us a 5-star rating for us on iTunes, or even a review if you're feeling funky, or share our podcast links on Facebook or any other social media, that really will help us get our message better known out there in the webosphere. We'll be taking a little break now over Christmas, but we'll be back in the new year to help spread the ideas of Ludwig von Mises, Murray N. Rothbard, and Hans Hermann Hoppe here at MisesUK.org. In the meantime, I wish both you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Please enjoy your property and freedom responsibly.